From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, the reunited State Senate Democrats hold their first press conference. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the coming governor's race, and New York U.S. Senator Gillibrand promotes legislation for more employees to obtain partial ownership in the companies they work for. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The newly reunited Senate Democrats held their first press conference, where they focused on what they said was their number one priority, a package of bills making it easier to vote. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Senate Democrats conducted a survey of eligible voters in New York on their voting patterns. Senate Democratic leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says it confirms what she already knew. New York's voter participation rate is abysmal.
And unfortunately, New York consistently ranks as one of the worst voting turnout states in the nation. And that's embarrassing. Just so you know, we're 41st in the nation following the 2016 general election with voter participation at only 57%.
The Senate Democratic Conference now includes members of the former breakaway Democratic group, the Independent Democratic Conference. They agreed to merge with the Democrats 2 weeks ago. Former IDC leader and now deputy Democratic leader Jeff Klein says voters offered many different reasons for why they find it difficult to get to the polls.
Our survey found overwhelmingly that most people want to vote, and their reason for not voting is sometimes a basic child care issue, how to take care of the kids, or they were working late, or they didn't know about the election. But when you turn around and say we can do something as simple as early voting, over 75% of individuals say, yes, this would make it easier to vote, and I certainly will vote.
The bills would establish early voting at designated polling sites up to 2 weeks before a primary, special, or general election, including some weekend days. It would also allow mail-in absentee voting for any reason. Currently, absentee ballots are only permitted if a voter has a specific reason, like being out of state on election day or having an overseas military posting. The measures would also extend primary polling hours upstate to 6 a.m. until 9 p.m. instead of noon until 9 p.m. It would also require the boards of elections to notify voters when there's a special election. Blair Horner with the New York Public Interest Research Group says the measures are not radical changes. They would simply bring New York up to date with rules in many other states.
We have anachronistic laws on the books. Why does it have to be that you can only vote on the second Tuesday in November? That doesn't make any sense in the modern age.
The bills face obstacles to getting on the floor for a vote. The newly aligned Democratic Conference includes two new senators elected in a special election on April 24th. But even with all of the additions, the Democrats still have just 31 seats, one short of the 32 required to hold the majority in the chamber. That's because one remaining Democrat, Senator Simcha Felder, still sits with the 31 Republicans, giving them control of the chamber. Republicans have so far not supported the measures. But Democratic leader Stewart-Cousins says she's not giving up hope.
You know, I've been watching changes here happen every day.
Senator Stewart-Cousins says she plans to continue to talk to Senator Felder to try to convince him to switch sides and caucus with the Democrats. Felder has said he intends to stay with the Republicans through the end of the session, but he has not ruled out changing his mind. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. The new poll coming out from Siena, which you've been saying all along is Governor Andrew Cuomo leading by 22 points now in the race for governor. There's a long time between now and then. But certainly with the establishment Democrats on his side and the name recognition.
And the $31 million that we know about, and he's out there raising money like crazy. Remember, this is a guy who has eschewed the kind of campaign finance laws we have, but he uses them, and he uses them well to his advantage. Look, I have said that this is going to quicken, and it is quickening. It's not 40 points, it's 20 points now. The fact that the establishment is coming out so heavily for Cuomo can only mean that those people who are sick of the establishment are going to pull a lever one way or the other. I've often said, and you've just acknowledged it, David, and I appreciate that, that Cuomo will win this election. Nevertheless, it is getting tighter. And you know, you never know what's going to happen in an election.
Well, let's talk about the third party candidate, Howie Hawkins. He's Green Party candidate, and he can affect the election.
Without question. Look, a lot of people like Howie Hawkins. You know, he was unloading trucks. This is a guy who not only talks the talk, but walks the walk. And, you know, he's run. A lot of people vote Green in this in these elections as a protest. And I think that if you get a guy who ends up being, for example, the second biggest vote getter in the election, that means line B goes to him in the future. So Howie Hawkins can be a real subliminal threat.
Well, let's stay with Hawkins just for a second, Alan, because one of the interesting parts of the conversation you had with him this week was the idea of unions and the double-edged sword there.
One of the fascinating parts of my conversation with Howie Hawkins has been, you know, he's a proud member of the Teamsters Union, and they did well for him. And I asked him about the corruption that goes on in some of the labor unions. We know that the history of the Teamsters has not always been the cleanest thing in the world. And he's a guy who knows what they've gotten for him, and he appreciates that. But I think on some level, he also understands that unions have to be as clean as they can, because if they're not, they lose a lot of public support.
The other story that's been making news this week, Alan, is the lieutenant governor, Kathy Hochul. And,
whoa.
Yeah, and the governor, Andrew Cuomo, referencing that she may want to run for Congress, she says she's sticking with the governor.
Well, first of all, remember that she lost that seat. Now, they've done changes in its geography, but she lost that seat to Collins. And the governor is saying, why don't you throw yourself into the bramble bush? You know, the answer is that he is a guy with a penchant for replacing lieutenant governors. This will be now his second one. He is giving her a strong hint that she should get out. I know the woman. She's a very bright, articulate, and important person. The problem for her is that she doesn't come from New York City. She comes from the Niagara area. When that happens, all the Democratic voters, not all of them, but most of them, are in the five boroughs. So now, Jemani Williams, a New York City politician, puts himself forward in the place where all the votes are, as opposed to her, where all the votes aren't. That can mean real trouble, because it may mean that the governor is going to be saddled with a lieutenant governor candidate he doesn't like. Look, this has happened in the past. Papa Mario Cuomo got saddled with Al Del Bello. We don't know why he didn't want Del Bello, but after they both got elected, he treated Del Bello extremely badly, and Del Bello bailed out and got out. So it is possible that Andrew Cuomo is going to end up with a lieutenant governor not of his liking. Remembering in New York State, David, you run in a primary for lieutenant governor separately, but then when the election comes, you run as a team.
Finally, Alan, as ethics reform hangs over the capital of New York, we witnessed the retrial this week in the case against former Speaker, Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver.
Well, look, I wouldn't want to be Sheldon Silver right now. He got a retrial, but at the same time that the appellate court said, you know, there's good reason to think he was guilty, basically, except that the judge's instructions to the jury were not correct in terms of the McDonald decision, which deals with how you have to show the quid pro quo. I'll do this for you if you do that for me. There's a major witness, the doctor who Shelley Silver allegedly asked to send him patients in response for a government grant. I've been following the trial, and I think it's going to be a very difficult one for Shelley to win. Nevertheless, stranger things have happened. And remember that a jury has a number of people, 12 people on it, and one of those people, that's all it takes for a hung jury.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand visited an employee-owned company in Rotterdam this week, promoting legislation she says would pave the way for more employees to obtain partial ownership of companies they work for. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
Gillibrand, a Democrat, spoke at Schenectady Steel Company.
Rewarding work means paying workers enough so that they can actually take care of their families. It means putting on the brakes on companies in the region who want to shut their doors and leave our communities stranded. It means giving hardworking men and women the means to save for retirement, take a vacation once in a while, and get some time off, God forbid, when a family member is sick. It means when the owner of a company retires, it's not suddenly going to make dozens of people unemployed. And it means making sure everyone in the community who wants to work hard has access to a good job that actually takes care of them. That's what rewarding work means. And that's what we need to do now because we urgently need to make changes to the way our economy works if we want the Capital Region to succeed.
Senator Gillibrand is touting employee stock ownership plans, known as ESOPs, in her bipartisan Main Street Employee Ownership Act as a way to stem the tide of retiring business owners who might otherwise sell or close their companies.
There are thousands of businesses in New York that are owned and run by baby boomers who are getting ready to retire over the next few years. How can we guarantee that those companies will keep running and stay local after their business owners retire? Too many workers don't have much of a say over their own well-being because they aren't being treated fairly by their companies. How can we make sure that when people go to work, they feel pride in what they do, they are properly rewarded for their time and their labor, and they're actually treated with dignity? This is exactly what employee ownership can do for us through the use of employee stock ownership plans, or ESOPs, and co-ops.
Gillibrand says the bill would provide $500 million in support for ESOP programs through the Small Business Administration while broadening the SBA's authority. Congressman Paul Tonko, a Democrat from the 20th District, added that the focus ought to be on workers and the economy.
And it's important for us to make certain that the work training programs are there, that tax policy that's done in Washington should speak to the great many of workers in this country. We failed in that opportunity, and we need to have programs like ESOPs. If there is a way for Small Business Administration efforts to strengthen ESOPs, let's do it.
The House version of Gillibrand's bill has already passed.
Workers in employee-owned companies are paid 5 to 12% more, and they have over two times more retirement savings than they have in other jobs. They also have greater job stability.
Schenectady Steel President Claudio Zullo.
In 1986, Schenectady Steel became 100% employee-owned. So from 1924 to 2018, we are a 94-year-old company. We're going to be 100 years old in 2024. And that's all made possible by its employees.
Mayor Gary McCarthy says the Electric City is fortunate to have companies like Schenectady Steel, which he calls the backbone of the old American economy.
And it shows that we can still be competitive. But we have to have mechanisms which allow these type of businesses to be financed, to go through sometimes generational transfers, and to maintain their position within the market.
Gillibrand says there are more than 2.3 million companies employing one in six workers nationwide with owners who are at or near retirement, including an estimated 181,370 businesses in New York employing 1.6 million workers.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The U.S. Supreme Court will not hear a case from Constitution Pipeline Company over New York's denial of a key permit. Opponents are claiming victory, but the pipeline company remains committed to seeing the project through. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
The High Court's refusal to hear the case lets stand an August 2017 U.S. Appeals Court ruling that rejected the pipeline company's argument that the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation was arbitrary and capricious in denying a water quality permit. The permit is required for the project to move forward. Wes Gillingham is associate director of Catskill Mountain Keeper, which has been engaged in legal battles against the pipeline.
What's happened here with the Supreme Court is they have said that New York State has the authority, federally granted authority, to deny a water quality certificate under the Clean Water Act that gives New York the right to protect its water. That's what's the huge precedent here. And this is a huge victory for all of us who live here and all of us who depend on clean, healthy water.
A spokesman for Williams Companies, a partner in the project, says in part, quote, "While we are disappointed in the Supreme Court's decision not to hear our case, we are still fully committed to pursuing our primary avenue of relief, which is the pending rehearing request with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission," end quote. Again, Gillingham.
They can say that, at least on the legal front. They have lost multiple times now, and this is really the nail in the coffin.
Constitution Pipeline's rehearing request with FERC is over FERC's January rejection of the company's petition that asked to find that New York State wrongly denied the water quality permit. A FERC spokeswoman says the commission is still considering the request, and there is no timeline for a decision. The Williams spokesman says the company believes that the FERC-approved project should be allowed to proceed with construction. He says, quote, "The Constitution Pipeline is much-needed energy infrastructure designed to bring natural gas to a region of the country that this past winter experienced the highest natural gas prices in the world," end quote. In April 2016, the DEC denied Constitution Pipeline a water quality permit, and Constitution argued that the DEC waived its authority by failing to act on the permit within a certain time period. At issue is when the clock started for DEC to decide on the permit. Constitution withdrew and resubmitted applications after requests for more information. FERC's January decision rules that the refiling of the application restarts the one-year waiver period under the Clean Water Act. Thus, the DEC was within its authority and timeline to deny the water quality permit. Gillingham says Catskill Mountain Keeper, an intervener in the case, along with other groups such as Stop the Pipeline and the Sierra Club, have been fighting against the pipeline for some 10 years. He believes the Supreme Court's refusal to hear Constitution Pipeline's case is precedent-setting beyond New York.
I think this really speaks to pipeline construction across the country, that states have the ability under the law, under the Clean Water Act, they have the federal authority to oversee how to protect their streams and rivers for their communities and their people.
Constitution Pipeline's 124-mile natural gas pipeline is planned to run from Pennsylvania to New York. The route in New York would go through Broome, Shenango, Delaware, and Schoharie counties, ending in Schoharie County. DEC did not respond to a request for comment in time for this broadcast.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation has issued a draft invasive management plan, which includes 8 objectives and new strategies to prevent or manage aquatic and terrestrial threats to the ecosystem. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
New York's Draft Invasive Species Comprehensive Management Plan sets priorities for management and preparedness, looks to build partnerships and support current programs, and improve prevention and response to invasive species. The report notes that the state has been making progress toward creating a broad-ranging management program. The Adirondack Park Invasive Plant Program actually deals with all types of invasives, from plant to aquatic to insects. Director Brendan Quirion notes that a statewide comprehensive management plan was the last recommendation of a 2005 Invasive Species Task Force report.
The original 12 recommendations included things like building out all 8 partnerships for regional invasive species management, like APIP, building out the New York State Invasive Species Research Institute, which is now in operation, establishing IMAP invasives. So it's been a progression. All of those recommendations took time to implement, and now we're finally to the point where we can say, you know, look at all of these great programs that are in place. How do we make sure that they're operating in the most effective manner to address invasive species threats across New York State?
Lake George Association Executive Director Walt Lender says concerns about invasive species have been discussed for over a decade, and he is looking forward to implementation of a statewide plan.
We here on Lake George have a mandatory boat inspection program that stops invasives from getting into the lake, and that's a very important and very efficient program. But statewide, we need something to help stop invasives from spreading across the landscape.
Lender says the draft plan formalizes much of the work that is being done and will put all programs on the same track.
I think it's a very big step in the right direction, but I think we will always be tweaking it and we will always be looking for ways to improve the way we prevent invasive species from moving around. Invasive species, each one is very different. Some travel on boats, some travel through the air, some travel on wood and other products. So each invasive has to be taken into consideration on its own, and the way it travels, the vectors that it follows, have to be addressed individually. So I think, you know, having a statewide plan talks about rapid response, talks about early detection, talks about prevention. Those are all very important aspects to it.
Quirion reports that more than 1,000 different infestations of invasives were eradicated in the Adirondacks in the past year.
In order to really drive resourcing to where it's needed and is going to be most effective, you have to have a strategy like this and the political buy-in to actually implement. So this is the first step. The next step is to really ensure that everyone is bought into this approach and funding gets to where it's needed.
Public comments on the draft plan are being taken through June 1st. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1818. Or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.